Welcome to this edition of Back to Basics with Pastor Brian Broderson.
The world without Jesus is in darkness. Not physical darkness, of course, but spiritual and moral darkness. The vast majority of men neither see nor understand the value of their souls. Have you ever noticed that? No concept, no understanding, no value regarding their soul whatsoever, no concern.
Today on Back to Basics, Pastor Brian continues his study in the Gospel of John. Join us as Pastor Brian begins his teaching on John chapter 8, verse 12, in a message titled, The Light of the World. Now, here's Pastor Brian.
Here we are, back once again in the 8th chapter of John's Gospel, picking up in verse 12. Now, as we pick up in verse 12, we pick up on the day after the final day of the Feast of Tabernacles, and Jesus is teaching in the treasury area of the temple. Now, he's just finished dealing with the woman who was caught in the very act of adultery, as well as with those who had accused her. So he now turns back to his audience and continues to teach. You remember, they broke in upon his teaching session. It was early in the morning that he had gone back into the temple area, and he had a crowd of people gathered around. He was ministering to them, teaching them, and then these guys broke into that teaching session with their accusations against that woman. And now all of that's passed, and Jesus goes back and continues his teaching. And here he makes his second I am statement. And he says in verse 12, speaking to them, I am the light of the world. Now, perhaps you remember that 8 times in the Gospel of John, Jesus applies the name by which God revealed himself to Moses to himself. 8 different times, John records that for us. Here stating, I am the light of the world. Now remember, all of this is happening on the tail end of the Feast of Tabernacles. The Feast of Tabernacles began with the lighting of a giant candelabra that would light up the entire area of the temple. So that's how the feast would begin. Now, this was to commemorate God's glory that lit the way for Israel as they journeyed in the wilderness. Remember, we talked about some of the other things surrounding this Feast of Tabernacles. The priest would go up and bring the pitchers of water, and they would pour them out on the stone. Remember, that was to commemorate God supplying water for the Israelites while they journeyed through the wilderness. So this lighting of the candle was to commemorate the glory of God that led the people through the wilderness. Now, it's interesting to me, as you really begin to study John's gospel, to see how much this gospel is rooted in the Old Testament. I don't think initially, or through maybe, you know, a cursory reading of it, I don't think you necessarily pick those things up. But as you really get into it, you begin to see that there is a major connection between this gospel and the Old Testament. We saw in the early stages of the gospel the similarities between John chapter 1 and Genesis chapter 1. And in the last couple of chapters, we've seen more of those things connecting the Old and the New Testament. We saw that Jesus likened himself, you remember, to the manna that God supplied the children of Israel with in the wilderness. He said, I am the living bread that came down from heaven. And then you remember he referred to himself as the one who would give the water. As they were commemorating that water that came from the rock, it was on that occasion that Jesus stood and said, "If any man thirst, let him come to me and drink." And now here, he's referring to the light of God's glory that dwelt among the Israelites. Now, I want you to notice that Jesus did not say, "I am the light of Israel." Now, he very well could have, because he certainly is, but he goes far beyond the boundaries of Israel. He says, "I am the light of the world." You see, his mission was not merely to save Israel, but his mission was to save the entire world. And that is exactly what the prophets declared concerning the Messiah. Listen to God's word through Isaiah regarding the Messiah. Chapter 49 of Isaiah, we read this: "It is too small a thing that you should be my servant to raise up the tribes of Jacob and to restore the preserved ones of Israel. I will also give you as a light to the Gentiles, that you should be my salvation to the ends of the earth." Do you remember the prophecy of Simeon recorded in the second chapter of Luke? Simeon said, "My eyes have seen your salvation, which you have prepared before the face of all peoples, a light to bring revelation to the Gentiles and the glory of your people Israel." So there are many more. These are just a couple, but many more of the prophetic passages regarding the Messiah spoke of him in these terms, as being the light, as bringing light, not just to Israel, but actually, more specifically, bringing light to the Gentile nations. And so Jesus stands here and he says, "I am the light of the world." Now, the implication here is clear. The world without Jesus is in darkness. Not physical darkness, of course, but spiritual and moral darkness. The vast majority of men neither see nor understand the value of their souls. Have you ever noticed that? No concept, no understanding, no value regarding their soul whatsoever, no concern for the most part amongst people about their own souls. There's no understanding of the true nature of God amongst men. And men are quite content to just sort of devise their own picture of who God is or what he might be like. There's no reality amongst men for the most part concerning the world to come. People generally aren't thinking so much about the world to come. They're thinking solely about this present world. Notwithstanding all the discoveries of science, all the advances that we've made, all the technological advances and so forth, notwithstanding those things, darkness still covers the earth, and gross darkness still covers the people. But Jesus stands, and to this group of people that were listening to him, he makes this incredible claim: "I am the light of the world. I am the light of the world." You know, when you look at these "I am" statements of Christ, they are profound, utterly profound. You remember earlier he said, "I am the bread of life." And now here he says, "I am the light of the world." Notice, these are very exclusive claims. He's not saying, "I am a light. I am one of many lights." He says exclusively, "I am the light of the world." And as we go on and as we look at these other "I am" statements that he will make, each one of them is profound in and of itself. I am the good shepherd. I am the door. I am the resurrection and the life. I am the true vine. Each and every one of these are profound in and of themselves. But here he makes this claim to being the light of the world. Now, we who live in a nation that has been greatly influenced by Christianity, we take many things for granted. There are many things that we enjoy, many privileges, many freedoms, many benefits, many protective kinds of things that really are the result of the effect of Christianity upon our culture. But we've lived with it for so long, and for quite some time it's been, in a direct sense, it's been disconnected for the most part from Christianity, but we are still living with many of the benefits of the impact of Christianity and, of course, ultimately, of Christ upon the world. In a book entitled How Christianity Changed the World, the author, Alvin J. Schmidt, he stated this. I'd like to read it to you. He said, on the basis of historical evidence, I am fully persuaded that if Jesus Christ had never walked the dusty paths of ancient Palestine, suffered, died, and risen from the dead, and never assembled around him a small group of disciples who spread out into the pagan world, the West would not have attained its high level of civilization, giving it the many human benefits it enjoys today. One only needs to look to the sectors of the world where Christianity has had little or no presence to see the remarkable differences. This observation is not just the result of my Christian conviction, says the author, but also the opinion of many reputable scholars, some of whom are or were not Christians. For instance, W.E.H. Leckie. Although a critic of Christianity, in his voluminous writings, frequently credits Christianity for the many civilized values and practices it gave to Western society. You know, again, many of the things that we take for granted are the result of the influence of Christ upon the world. Now, we're living in a time when there are people who are hell-bent, literally, on driving all of the influences of Christianity out of the culture. These people don't really know what they're doing. They don't know what they're asking for in the asking of the removal of the presence of Christ from the culture. The very things that they enjoy, the very things that protect them, the very things that give them the liberty to speak freely and to do the things that they do are a result of the influence of Christianity. Now, in that book that I mentioned, How Christianity Changed the World, the chapter titles alone give insight into Christ's influence on the world. I want to read you 10 of the chapter titles, and this will give you some understanding of the great impact that Jesus Christ has had upon the world. The sanctification of human life. Now, we take it for granted that life is sacred. That's something that we all believe in. When somebody is murdered, we see that as a great tragedy. We see that as an atrocity. We see that as a horrible thing. But you know, that has not been the case historically. We talk about the Romans and the Greeks being civilized. They were anything but civilized in many areas. They were very, very barbaric. And in this particular book, he talks about the practices of the Greeks and of the Romans. One of the major practices was infanticide. Infanticide is the killing of unwanted children. And this was a common practice among the Greeks and the Romans. They would take their little children. If the child was weak or sickly or deformed in any way, or a financial burden possibly, or anything like that, they would take the child and they would kill it. They also practiced abortion. There's a lot of writing amongst the Romans concerning abortion. And the women in those days were able to have abortions through taking certain potions. And an interesting thing I found out, something that I hadn't known before, the Greek word pharmakia, which is translated sorcery or witchcraft in our New Testament, which refers to potions that were used in relation to sorcery and witchcraft, that word is connected constantly in Roman writing with abortion, because the women would drink potions that would abort the child. And so Roman writers and early Christian writers connected those two things together. Infanticide was a common practice. Abortion was a common practice. The abandonment of children was a common practice. They would have places in the city of Rome that people would just come and drop their children off. They would be left to be cared for by whoever would care for them. And then we think also of the gladiatorial games. Do you know how many thousands of people lost their lives in the arenas, in the gladiatorial games? Now, as barbaric as we've become, you know, we've got the ultimate fighting and all of that stuff. I mean, that's still light years away from what was going on in the arenas in Rome. You see, until the gospel came and impacted the Roman culture, these were the common practices amongst the Romans. So the sanctification of human life was something that was the direct result of Christianity's influence upon the Roman culture and from that point until today. Christianity elevates sexual morality is the title of another chapter. And in this chapter, he talks about the immoral practices of the Greeks and the Romans and how it was Christianity that changed all of that. Women receive freedom and dignity. The poor feminist ladies, I'll tell you, they've been duped. They bought into an absolute lie in thinking that somehow Christianity is an oppressor of women. There couldn't be anything further from the truth. Women receive freedom and dignity. Charity and compassion, their Christian connection, is another chapter title. Hospitals and healthcare, their Christian roots. Again, we take for granted the hospitals and the healthcare that we receive. But you know, practically any hospital you can go to, it's St. Joseph's or St. Jude's or Hogue Memorial Presbyterian Hospital or this or that Lutheran hospital or whatever. What does that tell you? It tells you that Christians were the ones who originally founded these hospitals. Christianity's imprint on education. Do you know it's a fact that atheists don't really start schools? They like to take them over, but they don't start them. You think of the atheistic influence in universities like Harvard and Yale and Princeton and these places. I was at Princeton last year. I was doing a conference in Princeton, New Jersey, and I went and walked the campus of Princeton University. And it is absolutely astounding because, you know, of course, there's all kinds of atheistic nonsense coming out of these universities, but you can't escape it. You're walking around the campus. There's plaques with scriptures. There's some of the great preachers of that era, Jonathan Edwards and people like that. There's this testimony in stone to how these educational institutions began. John Harvard began what we know today as Harvard University in order to train men to teach the Bible. You see, again, we take so much of this stuff for granted. Another chapter, labor and economic freedom dignified. So many benefits that have come to the workers came through, again, the influence of Christians upon government. Science, its Christian connections. We are living largely with an atheistic scientific community today. But all of the founding fathers of modern science were either theists, believing that there was a God, or they were actually Christians. Or some of them, of course, would have been Jews as well. Liberty and justice for all, that whole idea is rooted in Christianity. And slavery abolished a Christian achievement. That's the last title there in those chapter titles. Slavery abolished, a Christian achievement. It was Christians who abolished slavery. It wasn't the United Nations. They don't give a hoot about slavery. It's utter nonsense. They sit there and talk about their great care and compassion for people. There's slavery all over the world. There are people all over the world that are being oppressed. And they don't do anything about it. They like to talk about it. They like to talk about how terrible it is or was in particular, especially in the United States, and it was terrible. But there's plenty of modern day slavery going on, and they don't do a thing. They don't lift a finger. And what you see, even to this very day, in places like Darfur in Sudan, or in the area of the southern Sudan, or in South America or Central America, or you know, places like Brazil where they have these street children and all of this, who do you find taking care of these people? Who do you find reaching out to them? You know who you find? You find Christians. They're the ones who are doing it. What are they doing? They're reflecting the Lord Jesus and his heart, his love, his compassion. And they are perpetuating his influence, he being the light of the world. He is the light of the world. And wherever the gospel has come, light has come with it. Think of those native peoples in the South Pacific who were cannibals, who were headhunters. Each tribe divided up and fighting against each other and killing one another and eating one another and those things. It was missionaries who risked their lives going in to take the gospel to these people. And you have these philanthropists today, and you have these sociologists and all these people who are ranting all the time about how Christians went in and ruined these beautiful cultures, how they went in and messed up these wonderful living conditions. The people were living in paradise, and oh, the Christians went in and spoiled it. They were just having a great old time running around naked, and Christians went in there and made them put on clothes, and oh, how horrible that they would do such a thing. But you know, when you look and see what was really going on, it was a far cry from paradise. Killing each other, raping, murdering, eating. I mean, you know, that's literally the things that were happening. But it was the Christians who went in and risked their lives and gave their lives. Some of them became victims of the very cannibals they sought to reach for the gospel. They gave up their lives and became their dinner, but the next missionaries that came through had greater success and ended up leading many of them to Christ. And so these are the facts, the great influence of Jesus upon not just Western culture, but upon all of the world. Because wherever the gospel has gone in its true form, wherever the gospel has gone in its true form, you find pockets of light. You find pockets of hope. You find behavioral patterns and habits and traditions that were detrimental to life and to the well-being of people. You find that those things are altered, they're changed.
Let's take a quick break and listen to what Pastor Brian and his wife Cheryl are saying about this month's resource on Back to Basics.
Cheryl, you like devotionals. I do as well. And there's somebody that you love very much who wrote a devotional.
Would that be my father, Chuck Smith?
That would be him, yes.
I knew it, and that would be Wisdom for Today. You know, there's a great story about that devotional too. Brian, maybe you remember when we were doing Pastor's Perspective together, and somebody was asking me for a devotional that they'd recommend. And I started to recommend John Corson's because it was a devotional for her husband. And all of a sudden, we heard kind of a knock on the door, and we looked over, and there was my dad. And he was signaling something to me.
Yeah.
And then he opened the door, and he said,
Cheryl.
He was
reminding you that he had
that's
written
right.
a devotional.
That's right.
Yes.
And so, of course, without further ado, we said, wait, get Wisdom for Today.
Yeah.
It's a great devotional.
Yeah.
It really is.
And it's just a brief paragraph for each day imparting wisdom from God's Word.
That's right.
Thanks, Pastor Brian and Cheryl, for sharing about this month's resource. You can order the book Wisdom for Today by Chuck Smith by going to our website, backtobasicsradio.com. Scroll down until you see the photo of Wisdom for Today, and then click on the donate button. When you give a gift to Back to Basics, we'll send you the Wisdom for Today devotional by Pastor Chuck that is sure to be one of your all-time devotional favorites. And it's also an excellent guide for reading the Bible in 1 year. It's our way of saying thank you for your generous support of this ministry. We'd also like to remind you that all of our other resources are waiting for you at backtobasicsradio.com or by calling our request line at 1-800-733-6443. That's 1-800-733-6443. Our desire is to encourage you in your daily walk with God. We'll continue next time with more valuable insights from Pastor Brian as we study together in the Gospel of John. Back to Basics is the preaching and teaching ministry of Calvary Chapel, Costa Mesa, California.